We're in our question and answer session of lesson number one, and everybody has that ready to go over, correct? And we're down into the questions. I've asked you to read Matthew 21, verses 23 through 27, and that says, Randy, Matthew 21, 23 through 27. It becomes the backbone of our study. And it says what?
By what authority doest thou these things?
All right, and who asked that question?
Jesus asked
that. All right, Jesus asked that question. But there was a first question that was asked of Jesus.
They asked that
question.
Jesus asked that question of Jesus.
That's correct. And then Jesus said, all right, now that's right. Now show that the Jews and Jesus recognized the need for authority. What's implied in their question that helps us to see that the Jews recognized that? Randy?
Yahoo.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. How, what makes us think that the Jews recognized the need for authority by their question?
They did.
They thought they were the kingpin, and so they want to know, by what authority do you do it? Now, did the Lord and those Jews recognize that authority must come from the right source? Now, there was a split opinion on source. Jesus recognized the source is heaven. They recognized themselves as the source. But they recognized the need to have a source.
They were given Jews, at least the Sanhedrin Council, was given that authority by Rome.
Yes.
So they assumed that since Rome gave them the authority, they had all the authority necessary, and they had a high priest, and they figured, well, God gave them the authority to have a high priest, therefore, they can legislate law.
Yes, and that's their mistake. They didn't have that authority. It wasn't divine. Now, how did Jesus answer to the Jews? How did he silence them? Chris?
Well, he gave them two options. He said either it's from heaven or from man, and they reasoned that through and said they were fearful of the multitudes, popularity was very important to them, and they knew that they said of men that was not going to be popular thing. They said of God, then that creates a responsibility in that answer.
All right. Exactly right. Number five, Daniel. Why did God have respect unto Abel's offering, but not unto Cain's offering? All right, that's true. Letter A, what should we learn from this? Now, there's a passage that discusses in the New Testament Abel's offering. What passage is that? Hebrews what? 11:4. And what does it say? Anybody want to give me the gist of it without looking? That's right. By faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice. Now, what should we learn from this? What does it mean, Jonathan, to act by faith?
That you've heard and been
obedient. All right. You've heard and you've been obedient. How do we know that both Cain and Abel had the same opportunity to obey God? Do we know that, first of all, Carolyn?
Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God.
That's right. And that's found where?
That is in
Romans 10:17. That's right. How do we know, however, that Cain had the opportunity to act by faith just as well as Abel?
God is no respecter
of persons. Exactly. And the passage is?
Acts 10:34.
Very good. That's right. Number six, after reading Leviticus 10:1-2. By the way, Rick, Leviticus 10:1-2. What am I reading about in Leviticus 10:1-2? Pardon me? Uh-huh. David, help me out. Leviticus 10, what's there? Nadab and Abihu, that's right. And Nadab and Abihu attempted to do what, little David? Yes, they attempted to burn incense unto the Lord. Was it accepted or rejected? And why? That's right. They did not use the coals from the altar. Exactly right. Did the fire which they used burn the incense just as well as any other fire would have? David? Yeah, it would have burned, but that wasn't the issue. And we want to ping in on that because what we're going to see eventually is that results accomplished does not determine whether something is authorized. Number 7. Read 2 Chronicles 26, verses 16 through 21. What do I read about? Peggy Sue, what do I read about in 2 Chronicles 26, 16? Yes, and who did that? Uzziah, very good. King Uzziah. What was the sin of King Uzziah initially? Dick, you have that for me? This is Uzziah, not Uzzah. This is Uzziah. And he's the fellow that went into the temple to do something. And what was it he wanted to do? Exactly right. He wasn't a priest. Now, where did his problem begin? Why did he think he could go into the temple and burn incense in the first place, Betty? Pride. Exactly right. When he had accomplished a lot of good, a lot of reforms in the kingdom of Judah, his heart was lifted up. Joey, question? Comment? Okay. Oh, number 8. What common lesson is taught in the, thank you, Richard, in the Old Testament accounts of Cain and Abel, Nadab and Abihu, King Saul, and Uzziah? What's the common thread in all of this? John? Yes. We've got to respect what God says. Number 9. Were the good intentions of King Saul enough to justify his efforts to offer the best of the Amalekites to God? Sarah, what do you think? Was Saul's intentions good? Did that make it right, what he did? No, did not. Number 10, must man have authority from God for everything that he does? Must man have authority? Charlesy? He must. And we need a passage by that. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Where do I read that? Colossians 3:17. Very good. Lesson number 2. Lesson number 2. Y'all done good. Lesson number 2. The illustrations and the passages, for the most part, that we've been using in lesson number 1 is from the Old Testament. In this portion of our study, we want to review just a little bit in lesson number 1 and look at some New Testament passages and see that divine authority is most definitely needed, and that's taught in the New Testament as well as the Old. Now keep in mind, what is it that the word authority communicates? What does that word mean? Yes.
I just kind of have
to. Other questions,
but not this. Did we get a PowerPoint of lesson 2?
No. I don't think you did.
Okay.
You did? I did pass. Yes, I did pass out a PowerPoint for lesson 2.
Questions, but I must have unstapled.
Okay. We'll get you one. Okay. Remind me after class to get you one. What does the word authority mean? You know, when we're talking about, do you have authority to act? What are we saying, Joey? You've got the power to act. You have the right. You have the privilege, as it were. You may do this. Now, Jesus recognized and taught the need for divine authority. Once again, Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 23. This you want to put in your list of passages, and no, this is not the same as Matthew 21. Matthew 7, 21. What's it say? A little louder. All right, now we've got on that occasion some that would say in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in thy name, by thy name cast out demons, and by thy name do many mighty works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you, ye that work iniquity. A powerful passage for the context of our consideration, the subject of authority. Here were some who said, didn't we do these things in your name? What are they asking him, Jonathan?
Well, they're saying we've done all these wonderful things. You said that we're doing it for you.
Yes, but that expression, in your name,
in your authority,
by your authority, didn't we cast out demons in your name? Didn't we do many mighty works in your name? Didn't we do all these things in your name? But he would say unto them, depart from me, ye that work iniquity. That word iniquity is an important word. Who's reading from the New American Standard? Randy, would you read for me verse 23? Matthew 7, verse 23.
I don't have it open, but I believe it says lawlessness.
Yeah, I believe it does. Yeah. In fact, I'm right sure it does. But it becomes definitive. How many of you are looking at the New American Standard translation? It does say lawlessness, doesn't it?
And I will declare to them, I never knew you, depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.
Practice lawlessness. It's important for us to understand the word that's used here literally means without law. Now, if you're practicing something without law, what are you doing? It's without authority, isn't it? Yeah, it's without law. Law is what gives you the right to act. And if you practice it without law, you're practicing it without authority. Now, let's go back to their question. Jesus said, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day. What's that day, Jonathan? Judgment day. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, did we not prophesy in thy name? By thy name cast out demons, and by thy name do many mighty works. And then, that is in the judgment, will I tell them, you depart from me, ye that work lawlessness or practice lawlessness. The question that they've asked, didn't we do these things in thy name? Emily, didn't we do these things in thy name? When Jesus said, depart from me, ye that work or practice lawlessness. What was the answer to their questions? Didn't we do these things in your name? Jesus said, depart, you're workers of iniquity. You practice lawlessness. Again, what was the answer to their question? No. Now, I want you to look at that closely. This is a passage we're familiar with, and I dare say often miss the point on that last verse. Jesus said, what you do is you are a worker of iniquity. The answer to your question is, no, you did not do these things in my name. Now, you may have thought that you did. But thinking that these things are in my name and the reality of them being authorized by me are two different things. No, I did not authorize those things.
Interesting to note, we're not talking about non-believers that are unacceptable to God. We're talking about people that claim to be religious.
Yes, but hasn't that been the case even with our Old Testament examples? When we look at Cain, when we look at King Saul, when we look at Nadab and Abihu, left them out. When we look at King Uzziah, we're talking about folks that would recognize themselves as good people, folks who were religious people, who are offering up an act of worship unto God, but yet the very thing that they are doing is an act of lawlessness. It's without authority. David? Yeah. Yeah. They thought they were very religious, but they were not. And so we want to see. Matthew, the 13th chapter, teaches the same thing. Amy, would you read big and loud for me from this passage? Matthew, the 13th chapter, verses 41 and 42. Matthew 13, 41 and 42. Ready? There you go.
The Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all stumbling blocks and those who commit lawlessness, and will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
All right, these are who are going to be gathered and cast into the furnace of fire. They're going to be gathered out of what, Megan? These who will be gathered out of and cast into the furnace of fire will be gathered out of what? Yes, they practice lawlessness, but they're gathered out of what?
His kingdom.
What is the kingdom, John?
The church.
The church. Now look at that carefully, folks. Just because you're a member of the Lord's church is no guarantee that everything you do is going to be with divine authority. Here are some who would be gathered out of the kingdom and cast into the fire, and they were called workers of iniquity. Now, you take that home with you. Just because somebody professes to be a member of the Lord's church, a citizen in the kingdom, doesn't mean that he submits to divine authority.
Back to Matthew 7, 21. Let me look at it again. Well, it's the same point that you're making, but verse 21, Jesus basically says it's not what you say, it's what you do.
Exactly right.
And verse 23, what has always fascinated me was he says, I will declare to them, I never knew you.
That's right.
These are not Christians.
No.
These are people who claim to be Christians and never were.
Yes, in Matthew 13, these are those who claim to be Christians, in fact are. They're members of the kingdom. Or citizens, I should use the correct terminology.
Isn't the kingdom those that are saved?
Supposed to be. We need to have a study on the use of the word kingdom. Depends on the context. The word kingdom may very well be used, and often is, to identify simply the church. But not everybody that's in the church is saved.
Well, in God's eyes, if you're in the church, you're saved. Correct?
No. Because to get into the church, we're baptized into the church. Now let's suppose I am baptized into the body, baptized into the church, I commit sin, I become a worker of iniquity, what I got to do to fix it? Be baptized again?
So
no.
Yeah. If you walk away.
Yeah. Yeah. You got the point.
What was the answer to that?
Well, not everybody who is a citizen in the kingdom is faithful. He was asking the question, is the church used simply to describe the saved? Not necessarily. Because the church may have some who are unfaithful. And this is the case here. We see that the term kingdom and the word church are used in many places interchangeably to talk about the same body of people. But here we see that some will be gathered out of the kingdom and cast into the furnace of fire. Meaning that there will be some who are citizens in the kingdom, members of the body. There are some who've been added to the church who will become unfaithful and the works that they do are without authority and they'll be cast into the furnace of fire.
And they can regain.
Yeah, they can straighten up and repent before that day. Yeah. Right. Illustration after illustration after illustration. Yeah. What I want us to see right here is we sometimes develop this us and them mentality. You ever do that, Daniel? Us and them. And so we feel like that, well, we're over here, we're the us. And so because we're in the church, then that means what we're doing is okay. Not necessarily. There's never a time to raise the, or that we should never, let me say that again. There is not a time when we should feel so comfortable that we don't have to ask the question, by what authority do we do this? We need to ask that question. Just because we have this us and them mentality, I'm a member of the church, therefore it must be authorized. Not necessarily. We look at denominationalism and we say, well, I know that that's not authorized, but here we are, it's got to be okay because you see, I'm in the kingdom. The point here is, there will be those gathered out of the kingdom and cast into the fire. Those who are workers of iniquity.
After all, who's Paul addressing when he says, examine yourself to see whether or not you're
impaired? Well, that's right. He's talking about those. That's right.
The world outside the church. He's addressing people, you know, in a congregation. He says, examine yourself to see whether or not you're
impaired. That's
right.
And now,
you know that you're in the kingdom is by examining the church that you're in and making sure it's right.
That's right. Examine your own life. Carolyn?
Throughout the different books, he's addressing a lot of different groups, one being those, the faithful in the kingdom, the unfaithful of the kingdom, those who think that they have obeyed but really haven't, say, denominational.
Not in the kingdom.
There's people in completely other religions who are thinking that they're worshiping something, but it's not even close. And
yeah.
Then there's those who are, you know, thieves and murderers, and I mean, we have all these different groups of people who may or may not think they're going to heaven.
And the common denominator of all of this is authority.
Right. No one unfaithful in the kingdom.
Pardon me?
There's no unfaithful in the kingdom.
Well, yes, we do have that illustrated here in Matthew 13. In Matthew 13, there would be those who would be gathered out of the kingdom who practiced iniquity and cast into the furnace of fire. My point is, just because we're in the kingdom doesn't make us comfortably secure that everything we're doing is right. We've got to constantly examine and make sure that it's right.
My question is, no unfaithful that are in the kingdom.
Well, yeah, there are unfaithful people that are in the kingdom. And they'll be gathered out.
They won't make it.
The eternal kingdom, no, they won't go to heaven.
But yeah. They could still repent and not have to be baptized.
Yeah, yeah, that's the point.
It's like you can be a citizen of a country and be a traitor.
Yeah.
And you're still a citizen until they hang you for treason.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you forfeit all the benefits. Richard and then Joey.
No, I wasn't.
All right. No? Okay. No? Well, I thought I saw two hands. Well, one other question. Revelation 21, verse 8. Go back to that. Quit that. Revelation 21, verse 8. Mr. David Skinner, read that for me, please. Revelation 21, verse 8. But for the fearful, the unbelieving, etc., etc.
21:8. Let
me ask a question on that passage. Is it possible for someone to be baptized into the kingdom, enjoying the benefits of citizenship in the kingdom, and then become an unbeliever? Well, that's the very foundation of the teaching of once saved, always saved. They deny that once you're a believer, you can never be anything else. This passage says you can. Now, my point is, once you become a believer, that's not a guarantee that you will always believe, or that you will always be strong and not afraid. Or do we want to take the position that once you've obeyed the gospel and become a citizen in the kingdom, it's impossible to become a liar? Anybody want to go there? Well, no, we don't want to go there. Then what we see is it's possible for someone to be a citizen in the kingdom and become a worker of iniquity. You're acting without authority. David?
What do you call that dependent on the car for a certain speed, the governor?
I didn't hear. Well, that's right. That's right. Got decisions got to be made.
And I think the more you try to run on automatic, the further you get away from the kingdom. You've got to drive with your eyes open.
Give diligence. Talked about that Sunday. Got to give diligence. Exactly. Yes. All right. Jesus recognized and taught the need for divine authority. The apostasy. It's called the mystery of iniquity. Now, 2 Thessalonians, or the 1st and 2nd Thessalonian epistles, are quite fascinating in and of themselves. Yes, sir, Al. I'm there now.
I'm sorry, but it was back to 21:8.
All right. Revelation. Well, these are not necessarily exact as far as definition is concerned, but a man who's fearful. Let's just suppose that I'm in the workplace and I know that it's wrong to curse, and I know it's wrong to tell dirty jokes, and I know it's wrong to laugh at dirty jokes and so forth, but in the workplace, I'm a different person, you see, because I want to impress these fellows and I want to be one of the guys, and so when somebody tells a dirty joke, I laugh like the rest of them do. Why did I do that? I was afraid to stand and be a Christian. And what about the man who's fearful? Let's give a Bible definition. John chapter 12, verses 42 and 43, we read of the chief or the rulers of the synagogue who believed that Jesus was the Christ. But they were afraid to confess it, lest they be cast out of the synagogue, for they loved the glory of men more than the glory of God. For the fearful, he'll have his part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. When you talk about the unbelieving, We've illustrated that faith becomes the backbone of who I am. Is it possible for one to be a believer and then to cease being a believer? Well, sure it is. In the parable of the sower, you remember this in Luke chapter 8. Jesus talked about the seed that fell upon the thorny ground, who believed for a while, and then in time of temptation, they fell away. Now, is it possible for a believer to become an unbeliever? Well, sure it is. Jesus illustrated it. Their part shall be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which demonstrates the possibility of one who is a citizen in the kingdom to become a worker of iniquity and be gathered up and cast into the fire.
Hebrews 6.
Oh, yes.
Which talks about
many passages.
The very real possibility of a person who is once enlightened and then falls away.
That's exactly right. Yes, exactly right. Now, the books are... Yes, Jonathan?
Well, just while we're on that, even Revelation 21:7, the verse before that, makes the comparison between who will be rewarded for their actions in their life and those who won't be. 21:7 says, "He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son, but the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable."
That's right.
So, it's not just that you're not...
The one who overcomes. Now, the fact that we are to overcome implies temptation.
Right. The whole thing that Revelation is written about is to stay and endure.
That's right.
The temptations of the life.
That's exactly right. Now, these two books written to the church in Thessalonica, they're fascinating because evidently somebody's taught those folks some things different from what Paul taught them. And it has them very much concerned about what's going to be in the resurrection. And let's turn to it. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. In verse 7. Well, no wonder. That's 1 Thessalonians. I didn't think that looked right. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul specifically deals with this idea of the resurrection. Some had come along and taught those folks that in some way the second coming of Christ and the resurrection was going to be just next few days. And Paul is telling them, no, that's not the case. If you look at verse 1, he said, "Now we beseech you, brethren, touching the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together unto Him, to the end that ye be not quickly shaken from your mind, nor yet be troubled either by spirit or by word, or by epistle as from us, as that the day of the Lord is just at hand. Let no man beguile you in any wise. For it will not be, except the falling away come first, and the man of sin be revealed, and the son of perdition. He that opposeth and exalteth himself against all that is called of God or that is worshipped, so that he sitteth in the temple of God, setting himself forth as God. Remember ye not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things? And now ye know that which restraineth, to the end that he may be revealed in his own season. For the mystery of lawlessness doth work already. Only there is one that restraineth now until he be taken out of the way." Now, the principles that Paul is describing here were certainly already at work. But he identifies the mystery of lawlessness doth already work. What is the mystery of lawlessness that was already present during the lifetime of Paul?
A lot of things have been said about it. Rome was one of them.
All right. That's right. All right. It very well may be the development of Roman Catholicism, but I want you to see that anywhere in any age, that when an attitude begins to prevail, where one begins to elevate himself as equal with divine authority, now we've got a problem. Now, Paul said, here's what's going. It's already there. And we can look at Roman Catholicism and see that. We can see it illustrated, but not just in Roman Catholicism. We might want to use that as an illustration, but you'll remember in 2 Timothy or 1 Timothy chapter 4, beginning at verse 1, the same apostle. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1 said, "But the Spirit saith expressly that in latter times some shall fall away from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons." They'll fall away from the faith. When you do that, you're going to recognize somebody for authority, but you'll not recognize divine authority. Joey?
Specifically, why do you think the word mystery is used there? What's mysterious about lawlessness?
Well,
that's an interesting expression, mystery. Why the word mystery?
I'm not sure I know the specific answer to that. Mystery implies something that's not yet been made known, but Paul said it's already at work.
Right.
And so it's not necessarily a new thing. Perhaps the specific elements of it might not yet be made known, but the principles are already there. And they had been, as we've seen in Old Testament illustrations of even Cain. You have the principles of lawlessness at work in the life of Cain in these other illustrations.
Well, verse 8, and then that lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. That indicates that regardless of which man you want to point your finger at and say he's the man of lawlessness, or he's the man, behind any man of lawlessness, Satan.
Exactly.
It's all Satan.
Behind any man or men or group of men who represent themselves as authority when they are not.
Because men come and go.
They do.
But the spirit of lawlessness will stay alive until the appearance of his coming.
Exactly. Exactly the point. Now, didn't Paul tell the Ephesian elders that? I can't begin to imagine what that setting must have been like. Now, you might go into a group of people if you recognize the authority that Paul had and say, well, you know, here's Paul and he can tell these men, some of you are going to depart from the faith. But can you imagine knowing those men? Maybe even being present when those men were appointed to serve in the capacity of being an elder. And you know them well. You remember in that discourse of Acts chapter 20, Paul tells them, I was with you 3.5 years. I labored night and day with tears. Paul knew these men and knew them very well, David. That's right.
A lot of these people didn't realize that the divisions and the problems, a lot of them were coming from within.
Yes.
The scriptures, and I think that was the mystery that was starting to be revealed. Paul saw it, but I don't think a lot of people saw it.
Probably not. Can you imagine what that would be like? Daniel, turn over to Acts 20 for me, please. Begin reading at verse 28. Acts 20, verse 28. Hold it right there. Be on guard for yourselves. Who's Paul talking to? Who's he talking to, Daniel?
Elders.
And he's telling these elders, you take heed to yourselves. You be on guard for yourselves. And then your responsibility is to? And the flock. To do what? Yes, please. Read on.
I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away the disciples after them.
Look at that carefully. I know that after I depart, grievous wolves are going to come in and they're going to make havoc of you. They'll tear you up. It's one thing to recognize here's a local congregation, and from the outside, folks are going to come in and cause you trouble. But now Paul's talking to these elders that he's known well for a lengthy period of time, worked closely with for 3.5 years, and tell them, some of you, Randy, some of you, John, can you imagine how hard that would be? Some of you will arise speaking perverse things, and you'll draw away the disciples after them. You'll tear up this good church, and the thing that you're going to do that will result in division in this good church is you're going to assume some authority God didn't give you. Can you imagine how hard that would be to tell those men that he knew, no doubt knew well, knew by name, and to tell them, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to do it. You're going to tear it up. But the Lord died for it. And I tell you what, folks, when we see that, and you start putting names on that and faces on that you're familiar with, don't you set any man up on a pedestal, don't care who he is. You demand book, chapter, and verse, and that means we must understand the nature of authority. Note, when one rejects divine authority, he will substitute the authority of men. He'll either look to somebody else or he'll look to himself. That's always the case. No other choice.
It goes along with this and goes back to Joey's question about why did he use mystery of lawlessness
just a quick study of mystery. Used the American Standard Version used 28 times in the New Testament. But it talks about things that are hidden, which is obvious from the word mystery. And so it's used pretty much the way that it says here. It's not figurative, as it were. But really, the context seems to indicate people that are teaching lawlessness, as you read from the beginning of the chapter there. But these people are sneaky. They're sneaking in. We see that in the book of Revelation when the beast and the others come forth. And they're not just saying, hey, here I am, I'm Satan. They're going around, you know, doing an end run type thing. That's what these people are trying to do. It's a mysterious lawlessness. In other words, these people are doing things. Many of them, they know what they're doing. They know that they're doing lawlessness, and they're trying to deceive the saints. And so when it talks about the mystery of lawlessness, he's saying that it's here already. You need to watch out for it because it's here.
Well, that's right. Did you catch what he said here? Some of these folks are going to be deliberately deceiving people. But we've got to look at the other side of the coin. When you look at somebody and say, well, I know he knows better than that. He's up there deliberately trying to talk me into something he knows is wrong. What about the fellow that you know well? Maybe you've come to love him and appreciate him to a great degree, but at the same time, he's just wrong. He just don't know he's wrong. But he's wrong. And the thing that he's teaching is wrong. It's without divine authority. Are you going to say, well, you know, I love him so long through these years, and I've known him well, know his family, grew up with his children, and therefore, he can't be that wrong. Surely he wouldn't be that wrong. You want to take that position, Megan, and base your soul's salvation on somebody else? You want to be right. You want to know what's in that book because there's no substitute for it.
The interesting thing about the passage in Acts 20 is that there's a postscript in Revelation 2 when Jesus is talking to the church in Ephesus. At the beginning of verse 2 of chapter 2, Jesus says, I know your deeds and your toil and your perseverance that you cannot endure evil men. You put to the test those who call themselves apostles, and they are not, and you found them to be false. And you have perseverance and have endured for my name's sake and have not grown weary. But this I have against you, that you have left your first love. And then he says, remember therefore from where you have fallen, and repent and do the deeds that you did at first, or else I am coming to you, and will remove your lampstand out of its place unless you repent.
And then he says, he that hath ears to hear, let him hear. That means you and me. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just point out, I mean, that's true too, but just point out, this against you, that you've left your first love, the love of truth.
Yeah.
Is the love
we're going to hammer on that. But that's right. You hold that thought. Keep it surfaced every once in a while because we're going to hammer it. Comment?
Peter's a prime example. I mean, we look at these other churches, but Peter had several times where he was cowardly on the night that when Jesus was betrayed.
Yes. That's right. We've got to. David?
I guess 2 John, verses 9 through 11. He that abideth and transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ, hath not God.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Now, getting back to our point in Matthew 7, verse 21, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, did we not prophesy in thy name, in thy name cast out demons, and in thy name do many mighty works? And then Jesus will say unto them what, Daniel? That's right. Depart, I never knew you. You're workers of lawlessness, iniquity.
How can he listed three things there that they've done?
That they claim they did.
actually prophesying his name?
No, they did not in his name. Whatever they did, it was not in his name.
Okay, well, so it was... doesn't seem like you could cast out a demon by yourself.
Who said they did? They claimed they did. Yeah.
They were convinced they did.
Evidently. Yeah. Evidently. That was their argument. And that was their argument they made in that day. Linda? Okay. David? Randy?
I just love that verse 21. It's the one-step plan of salvation. It tells in one verse who's going to hell and who's going to heaven.
That's pretty pointed, isn't it?
One verse.
Yeah. Those who depart are workers of iniquity. Now, in Matthew, the 7th chapter, what's the setting of these events that are taking place here?
Sermon on the Mount.
Began in chapter 5, continues through chapter 7. Now, if you'll just read on at verse 21, or in verse 24 of Matthew 7. In this setting, he says, "Everyone therefore that heareth these words of mine and doeth them shall be likened unto a wise man who built his house upon the rock." It's not an accident, folks, that verses 24 through 27 follow verses 21 through 23. It's not an accident that here are some who claimed we did all these things in your name, and he said, "Depart from me, I never knew you." You want to know who I know? He said, "I'll tell you. Here are the folks that I know. Everyone that heareth these words of mine and doeth them." Now there's the man I know. But these fellows over here that make these bold claims, "I never knew you." Now you want to be identified with me, then you've got to hear what I say and do it. Now that man, he says, is like a wise man who built his house upon the rock. And the rain descended and the floods came and the winds blew and beat upon that house and it fell not, for it was founded upon the rock. Amy, who is the wise man of this passage? Who is the wise man of this passage? You've got to watch me. I'll just sneak up on you at any moment. Who's the wise man of this passage? David, help her out. Little David. Who's the wise man of Matthew 7? Well, you hear it first and then you do it. That's right. The wise man is the man who hears these words of mine and does them. Now, in the context of our study of divine authority, that'd be the man who respects divine authority. I hear what he says, and I'll do it. He's the wise man who built his house upon the rocks, and then when the storms came, his house stood. Look, if you will, now at verse number 26. "Everyone that heareth these words of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man." Cain and Abel. Which one was wise and which one was foolish, Joey? The wise man hears these words of mine and does them. The foolish man hears these words and does not do them. Abel was the wise man. Cain was the foolish man. That's right. When we think about King Saul, wise or foolish?
Oh, foolish.
Foolish. He heard and he didn't do it. Go ahead.
You just made the analogy of the rock being the authority. And in Matthew 16, when Jesus says he's going to build his house upon the rock, there's the same analogy.
There's authority. Yeah. Church built upon Christ. Other foundation can no man lay. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 11.
The verse where it says, "Depart from me, I never knew you." Somewhere else, please don't ask me where because I don't remember. But somewhere else in the testament, the Lord knows them that are his.
Yeah.
And I forget where that is.
But you'll know where it is next time, right?
Because you're about to tell me.
No, I'll let you find it for next time.
Okay. That's just reiterating the point you're making, is that
yeah.
There's a lot of people that would claim or think in their own minds that they're right with God, but that doesn't make it so. The Lord knows them that are his.
That's right.
And these concepts we're talking about are understood by the world too, because the world has their own phrases that reiterate these same concepts, and that is that talk is cheap and actions speak louder than words.
Exactly.
These are parallel concepts that the world understands, but that's all the Lord is saying here, is that you can talk, you can say, "Lord, Lord," if you want, but that doesn't make you right with me. It's he who does the will of my God.
Yeah, in Kentucky, we said the proof of the pudding's in the eating.
I'm sorry?
I said in Kentucky, we said the proof of the pudding's in the eating.
Yes, right.
Yeah. You understand that, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, the wise man. Let's go back to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 22. He says, "But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deluding your own selves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is likened to a man beholding his natural face in a mirror. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth away, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But he that looketh into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and so continueth, being not a hearer that forgetteth, but a doer that worketh, this man shall be blessed in his doing." That's not hard. The man who's blessed is the man who hears what God says and does it. That's the man who's the wise man, who hears what God says and does it. Like unto the man who built his house upon the rock. The foolish man, however, hears, but he doesn't do anything about it. In Luke chapter 6, verse 46, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" Isn't that a simple question? If you're going to call me Lord, what's that word mean, Jack? Master. If you're going to call me master, then do what I say. Isn't that what a lord does? He has authority to tell you to do, and you are in the role of submission. Now, before I run out of time, Richard, I've got about 2 minutes, I guess. If I wanted to read a passage that says, "It's not in man that walketh to direct his own steps," Donna, where would I turn? Not in man that walketh to direct his own steps. It's the other one. No, before that. Joey? Jeremiah 10:23, yeah. Now, Donna, if I wanted to read the passage that says that there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof is death. That'd be Proverbs, yeah. Yeah, that's in Proverbs. Where in Proverbs? 14:12, yeah, good. If I wanted to read about Cain and Abel, where would I turn, Betty Jo? Genesis something. Where? Randy? 4. Genesis 4. If I wanted to read about, by faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, Linda, where would I turn? Hebrews 11, verse 4. Faith comes by hearing, David Skinner. Where is it? Very good. Chris Simmons, if I want to read about Nadab and Abihu, where I turn? Very good. If I want to read about King Saul and the offering of the Amalekites as a sacrifice, David Dixon, where would I turn? Good. If I wanted to read John Grigowski about King Uzziah and being lifted up with pride and going into the temple and becoming a leper, where would I turn? 2 Chronicles what? 26. 2 Chronicles 26. Now then, you guys got these all written down in your list. Jonathan Hines, if I wanted to turn to a passage that says, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom, but he that doeth the will of my Father," where would I turn? All right, Matthew 7:21-23 is the passage that I'm looking for. "Everything you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord." Peggy Sue, where is that? Where is it? "Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord." Where? Colossians 3, verse 17. That's right. "Why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" Where is that? Luke 6:46. These need to be in your list. And if we've omitted anything, we'll catch it next time. So be sure you write an ongoing list. I'm going to have a chart of these just shortly so you can see them. And we'll go again next time.